All right, we have another Olympic item for you. So this show will give you a brief spoiler alert. Brief spoiler alert. All right, you've been warned. Reagan Smith from Minnesota gets the silver medal in the 100-meter backstroke. So Reagan Smith does not get the gold. She gets the silver in the backstroke. So we'll keep giving you the quick heads up, but we're going to provide you the news. But at least on the show, we'll give you a couple, 3-4 second head start if you choose to avoid it. But the idea that we're not going to report the news is rather silly. In fact, CBS News, they went with it on their own. Susie went with it on her own. Everybody's got their different policies. We'll continue to follow what we're doing unless we make a change. Jason Russell was kind enough to join us 2 days after the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Jason Russell, for 9 years, was on high-level White House Secret Service detail involving George W. Bush and Barack Obama. He is now with a company called Secure Environmental Consultants, and he was excellent when he joined us to talk about what he thought, where he thought it was valid criticism and the questions we needed to learn about the attempted murder of the president when it took place weeks ago. We have another day today where this time in front of the Senate, the acting Secret Service director said that the failed attempt on July 13th, that not even a counter sniper focused on the roof where the would-be assassin fired 8 shots at President Trump, injuring him and others and killing a rally attendee, said he was ashamed by it, and also added that there really is no way he can defend that the roof was not defended, the area where the shots took place before the shooter was eventually killed by the counter snipers. Jason Russell is kind enough to join us again on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Jason, appreciate your time. How do you feel about the information which the public has received so far? I am surprised that we have not learned more. I understand that the entire report wasn't going to be done. This is going to be about as thorough as anything when you think about somebody trying to kill a former president and at the time the leading contender being the next president. But we did get more information today from the acting director. But I thought we would get more. As someone who lived in that world for a long time, what's your assessment of that question?
Yeah, I do think we got more today. Obviously, the new director is trying to be a little bit more forthcoming. I would agree. I think still the questions are unanswered that, you know, having done that job and understanding all that goes into setting up one of those sites, it's almost a gap that I couldn't even fathom how it's even possible. You have so many meetings with the police and your local counterparts to really go through the security plan, that to have such a significant threat be totally missed is like, it's just baffling to me. And I think I'm guessing the director is just as baffled and trying to figure out, okay, who is responsible for this. And what I think you're probably going to see is people at the field office level, particularly in Pittsburgh, are probably going to be the ones held accountable.
There was a very heated point today with Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri, proud conservative, firebrand, definitely in these type of settings, is not afraid to work in his opinion, where he was furious with the acting director saying, why haven't more people been fired? Why haven't more people been fired? And the acting director, Ronald Rowe, was very strong in pushing back and saying, yes, we're going to have accountability, but I'm not going to get ahead of it, and I'm not going to fire people right away just to satisfy the public. What do you sense about those two questions and that dichotomy where Hawley's saying, come on, it was such a failure, somebody should be fired right now, and Rowe's saying, let us do our investigation before we leap to all sorts of conclusions?
Yeah, I mean, I think when you see those hearings, sometimes you're seeing people that want a good soundbite to make sure that they make it on
so
the news.
True.
The bottom line is they do need to get all the information before they can make a decision to end a person's career, right? This is pretty complex. So to figure out where the gaps were, what was missed, how it was missed, and the understanding, right? So it's not just about what was said, but what was understood by the people that, you know, were the local counterparts and the other agencies. So they'll definitely do a thorough investigation. I think you will probably see some accountability, but like any other organization, you have to follow a process. You can't just go from zero to termination without any type of process in place. So I think it's important to let those things progress and let the information come out as it will.
So let's balance the desire for sound bites, which happens way too often. You nailed it, especially on the congressional side. It's not it's just theater constantly on the House side. It's not as prominent on the Senate side, but there was some of it today. When the former Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle appeared, she seemingly wasn't prepared to answer any question. And maybe some of it was valid because it was 9 days after, and others, she was just overwhelmed by it. And she didn't look good, and I didn't think a number of individuals on either side of the aisle looked good. Do you think she made the right decision in stepping away, or was it a matter she didn't have any choice, and it was just going to happen? It was just a matter of when.
Yeah, I think there was too much momentum in that direction, right? So after what happened, and certainly after her testimony, it seemed like maybe that was already in the works. So there was, you know, maybe that was the strategy, right, to provide as little information as possible, knowing that you're going to leave the next day. But yeah, I mean, I think it was too far down the road. The unfortunate reality of that is now you're going to have an acting director during the busiest time of the Secret Service, you know, protective operations, and then obviously going into potentially a new administration, another new director. So all this change at the top is certainly not going to be good for the Secret Service as they try to fix some of these issues and, you know, and fill in any gaps that they have.
So let me circle back to your first point again. Jason Russell with us. He was with Secret Service, including high-level positions during the Bush, George W. Bush and Obama administrations. And the idea that we had this individual, Crooks, on that building for as long as he was. Now, Roe today emphasized the counter-snipers didn't know about him, and the immediate group around President Trump, former President Trump, did not know about him. But clearly, others did. So you alluded to this before, but I think it's worth a follow-up. How in the new year, does somebody stay up there as long as he did with at least some level of law enforcement asking questions and showing some level of concern?
Yeah. So I think you heard a little bit today, you know, one issue that's been fairly consistent just because of the way the Secret Service communicates with encrypted radios is often we're not on the same frequency as the local counterparts. So the solution for that is to put all the local counterparts commanders in a room and at least have a room where information flows to and from, right? So there should be a capability to communicate. That clearly fell apart at some point. So that radio communication piece, the one thing that I will say is that there is a significant difference between a suspicious person and a threat.
Yep,
you know, if you stopped every event because you had a suspicious person, you wouldn't have a single campaign event. Clearly, if there's a threat, then that's different because now there's been actions taken that, you know, potentially could be dangerous. But there's suspicious people in a lot of different events for a variety of reasons. You know, they're acting differently than everybody else. They may be wearing suspicious clothing. We try to identify those people and interview them when possible. But I think it is a dramatic difference. Once they knew there was a threat, then they took action, but that information got to them way too late, and that's truthfully unacceptable for the Secret Service to have that communication gap.
I think this is something I want to explore a little bit because I think that was a great answer. I have the feeling, though, Jason, if you gave that answer to certain individuals in the House and Senate, they'd be screaming at you, but look what happened, but look what happened. So give me examples. Or just the frequency, and just expand on it, where when it was President Bush or was President Obama, when the detail was even higher because it was the current president, where you would have questions or the detail would have questions about someone and shots weren't automatically fired. Because I think there are people saying, well, once there was even a question, shots should have been fired. And it's not just that clean and easy. I think that seems very clear.
Yeah, no, you're right. So, I mean, I think an example would be we'd see people that, you know, in these campaign rallies, obviously everybody's clapping and happy and jovial. And you'd occasionally see people that were exhibiting totally opposite behavior, right? They have no expression on their face, or maybe their hands are in their pockets and they're just acting differently. So that's somebody that we'd want to key in on, maybe keep an eye on them. You know, if they maybe were dressed inappropriately for the weather or something, we'd have a what we call a protective intelligence team go and have a conversation, or at least get in proximity to them. And that's somebody who we deem as suspicious. A threat is somebody who has the ability and capacity to actually, you know, hurt a protectee. Now, it's dramatically different, and there are suspicious people that happens often. I think the issue is you have, once again, you know, they don't really know. I mean, the truth of reality is that lawmakers don't know how to do protection. So they're taking these two words that sound familiar, and they're saying, well, these are kind of the same thing to me, when in reality they're not at all the same thing.
So let's say we chat in a month. So we chat September 1st. What do you think we'll know by then? And if we don't know certain things, what is a fair criticism at that point?
Yeah, I think we're going to know experience level of the site agent. So my questions would want to be, how many sites had the site agent done? You know, what was their experience level with site advances? I think we're going to know who reviewed the security plan and who was involved in the walkthroughs of the actual site. Because an agent is going to walk through a site with the supervisor. And essentially what happens in that walkthrough is they're quizzing you on everything. Okay, how did we deal with that building over there? What are we going to do about, you know, the rope line? How are we going to secure this? So they're asking you questions about your plan. You're providing them with a document that shows where you're posting people. And, you know, as part of that, they may say, okay, we need to do something to secure that building. So I think we're going to know more about how that process went. Who was actually involved in approving that from a supervisory level? And what was the experience level of the site agent? And then I think the last thing would be exactly what was the communication failure, like in terms of literally mechanics. Where did this call go to? How did it get where it didn't go to the command post and didn't get back out quicker? And I think we'll find those out within the next month or so. And if we don't, then, yeah, we need to start, you know, we need to start asking more questions.
Former Secret Service agent Jason Russell, key positions in the George W. Bush administration and Barack Obama, now with an excellent company. You can check out Secure Environment Consultants. Jason, you're really good. Thanks so much. I guarantee you we'll reach out to you again.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. We also have some news that's breaking about a prominent member of the news who is stepping away from that position. We'll tell you about it. We'll tell you, we'll ask you, does it matter that much? And I think we might debate our Olympic position again here on what information we should give, what information we should not, especially, by the way, when NBC is showing this live. Okay, it's even more dramatic for us to give the information when the network, which is carrying the Olympics, is literally showing it live, but we're not supposed to talk about it? Are you kidding me? Come on. 20 past 2 on CCL. Okay, let's get the Olympic situation again. I highly, highly doubt we're going to change this. First of all, on this station, you just heard CBS News at the top of the hour. They just gave the results. No spoiler alert. Susie Jones with the news, made the decision, gave the news without spoiler alert. We're giving you, hey, a spoiler alert. And then mentioning some of the most significant events. In fact, I'm going to say spoiler alert right now. So if you don't want to listen for the next 10 seconds, I'm going to give you results. Here we go. Team USA women's gymnastics, they win the gold. And Reagan Smith in the women's 100 backstroke, she wins the silver. Okay. So now you can tune back in. But the idea that we, a show where we discuss current events constantly, that we're not going to discuss what's happening, get out of here. No, we'll give you the warning. Plenty of places don't get. By the way, I have zero problem if they don't want to give you the warning. It's news as it happens. This isn't the 1940s. This isn't the 1960s. If you're a part of social media in any way, if you listen, if you listen to outlets that give you information, they give you information. And again, I'll reiterate what I said before the break. NBC right now is showing live events. They showed Team USA gymnastics and the competition. They showed Reagan Smith's event. This, they're done with, at least with the time zone here of 7 hours for us. They're giving you two things. They're giving you live as it happens during the day, and also showing it to the bigger audience at night. So to say a show like ours, which covers a lot of current events and plenty of sports, that we shouldn't discuss it at all because you're going to watch it at home? No. We just don't agree at all.
There are a lot of times where...
Not at all.
where TV show, sporting event, whatever. You watch it on a delay. I avoid as much social media, as much... Like, anything that I might potentially have it, I avoid it. And if I accidentally find out a spoiler, I'm not mad at the people that are presenting it. I'm mad at me for not doing a better job of tuning it out.
And, that's it.
And you've given... You've given the disclaimer. I mean, you've given, you can't do any more than say, hey, we're going to tell you X, Y, and Z in 3, 2, 1. I mean, it's very clearly, nobody wants a spoiler. But like you said, Carrie Levin is carrying it right now. I mean, are we going to be mad if you're flipping through the TV channels and you see Carrie Levin? You're, man, I can't believe that they'd have the audacity to carry this. You know, why are they carrying this live? They shouldn't carry it live. It's nonsense.
Among the texts, I'll just read this one again. Let's go to, because sometimes our texts come in very clean and sometimes they bounce around. We're getting a new system.
Oh, are we?
Clearly, not getting through your thick skull. There are literally no alerts. Why are you reporting the Olympic results on financially your low little budget show? Isn't CBS your rich company? Sounds like a slow day if you're grasping straws to fill this, blah, blah, blah. Not making sense. Okay.
This is a financial show.
I didn't realize this is financial. But, I mean, Odyssey, by the way, is this company in bankruptcy? Yeah, that's truth. We make fun of that. Grasping the straws, we're talking about the most discussed event on the planet today. So you were given multiple warnings. If you want to avoid it at all, Chris just nailed it. You just have to avoid all options. This isn't the teletype era, boys and girls. This is something we debated many times before, and it's simple. If you don't want to listen to talk radio, including a station where we discuss current events a lot, where there's the news at the top of the hour, you have that option. Reports now that Nora O'Donnell is leaving the lead gig and she's going to move out into a Barbara Walters-style interview role. Puck's Dylan Byers has all the details. Nora O'Donnell leaving the anchor chair at CBS Evening News for a different type of role. I've always thought she was best, to be honest, as a political reporter, political analyst. That's my view of Nora. I think Nora is good. I don't think she's great. I just don't, right? Clearly, you know who I think is great at CBS News, and I'd love to see our guy get the gig. Would he be considered? I don't know. He's great at one of the anchors. I guess we'd have to think again selfishly, how does it affect us? Yeah. Does that affect us with Major Garrett if he gets the gig? I would think we'd still be fine at 12:35 on Friday.
I think he'd be fine, yeah.
Maybe we'd get him more if he was the anchor.
You know, the availability, the best ability is availability.
Yeah. We'll circle back to this with DeRussia. Maybe DeRussia is in the mix. That'd be a heck of a move from nonsense with us to moving out. What if he's behind moving out Norah O'Donnell?
Now, see, Jason Rush. I figure he's got to make the leap to game show host and then to
end. I think he would rather be the game show host. I don't think there's any doubt. If you offer, well, there's no doubt. I know this. If you offer him Wheel of Fortune or the CBS News anchor position, he'd take Wheel of Fortune. Every
time. He went out to stalk Ryan Seacrest last week.
He'd take the CBS evening anchor gig. Just a hunch. Gas prices. Patrick DeHaan. What's going on? He's next for a smart, intelligent and informed conversation about what's going on with gas prices all across the country. This is the guy, Patrick DeHaan, on the show a number of times before. Follow him on Twitter, like over 66,000 do, at Gas Buddy Guy. Patrick is on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Always a pleasure, sir. I'm going to look at the tweet that drew me in to reach out to you again today. Why are gas prices higher than COVID? This sums up a big part of the problem, a loss of refining capacity due to COVID shutdowns, and we still have not fully recovered. Expand on that a little bit, Patrick, including the question, why haven't we fully recovered as of yet?
Well, some refineries permanently shut down. You'll remember, I mean, I think most Americans probably do, right? They took photos of gas prices back in 2020, and a lot of them said, oh, I can't wait to see the election. But we're forgetting that America just did not drop during COVID. Even in Republican-led states, there were shutdowns in Florida. There were shutdowns in Democratic-run states. A lot of Americans weren't driving. And so gasoline demand plummeted. The wholesale price of gasoline here in the Chicago region, which is the foundation for Great Lakes prices, had fallen at one point during COVID, I remember, to 20 cents a gallon. That's the refined product.
Wow.
Refineries do not make money. In fact, every gallon they produce, they're losing money, right? Because the intense cost of energy that goes into refining. So, you know, it's kind of like a major tech manufacturer of hardware. You know, if your hardware is in so little demand that you're actually spending more money to put it together than it's worth, you probably shut down. And that's what some refineries did. Now, also, Mother Nature hasn't really helped either. We did see a couple of hurricanes knock out refineries in the last couple of years. One refinery in Louisiana flooded to the extent that it just wasn't worth billions of dollars of investment rebuilding it. And there was a fire back in 2019 at a major refinery in Philadelphia. So those outages, weather-related, fire-related, plus some refineries permanently shutting down during COVID because they simply went broke. That has led us to a refining capacity in 2021 plummeted. So, you know, we've seen a little bit of recovery. There have been some minor expansions. One great example, you know, we're talking about Minnesota, is your neighbor there. The Superior Refinery in Wisconsin was rebuilt. That was incredible. That's back online. And ExxonMobil expanded a refinery down in Texas because it has the ability to export products down to South America and Latin America. But aside from that, refining capacity is still lower than where it was prior to COVID.
Okay, so let me ask it this way. There are certain businesses, as you well know, Patrick, that they'll never get back to where they were before COVID. They've had to adjust. They don't have as many customers. The workers aren't coming downtown or their office, wherever it might be. And this is their new normal. On the refinery side, if we turn the calendar ahead 2 years from now, and we're going to have hurricanes, we're going to have other natural disasters, are we in this area closer to 2018, 2019, or do we have to accept, and we all get kind of tired of this phrase, but we are now pretty much where we're at in the new normal in this particular industry?
There is a bit of both. We still are seeing Russia fight a war in Ukraine, which still there's a lot of sanctions. Well, just the flow of Russian oil is still affected, right? So there's still some difficulty there with the normal flow of oil. But there's also this new reality that, you know, wages don't generally go backwards unless we're in a depression. Nobody wants that. So there's a higher level cost of doing business. Real estate values are through the roof. Labor costs are up significantly. Gas stations, refiners, oil companies, we all have to pay for that. So, you know, the norm, right? Most Americans think normal prices, $2 a gallon. You remember back 20 right. years ago when the normal price was $1 a gallon?
Yeah, right.
So there is some level of that that we won't get back down to those levels. Having said that, there is some global refinery capacity that does continue to increase. So that'll help, you know, every once in a while we still say, well, refineries, you know, had a shutdown, prices jumped up, as what happened exactly a year ago in Minnesota. Prices skyrocketed because of a lack of refining capacity. So that's going to be less the wild card, but we probably won't get back down to those sub $3 prices on a permanent basis because those other costs continue to go up.
When Donald Trump is on the stump and he's part of one of his long, whining speeches, and he's talking about gas prices and he's talking about oil, and he'll say, we were energy independent under my administration as a complete contrast to what has happened under now Biden-Harris. I know I've asked this before, but it's so central to the conversation right now. When Trump and supporters of his say, hey, we were energy independent then, and now with all the regulations, Biden and Harris have slowed this down. As a fact finder, you say what?
Mostly false. There's a lot of nuanced details, and as an analyst, that people that share these tweets and share this misinformation may not know, right? Energy independence means something different. Just price gouging might mean something different to you than it does to me as an analyst. Energy independence, well, the truth of the matter is we're never going to be energy independent. That's why we continue to export some types of oil and import others. It's like going to the auto parts store. You're never going to see one type of oil on the shelf. You have to keep in mind that a lot of refineries in the U.S. were built in the 50s and 60s and 70s when the U.S. wasn't producing a lot of its own oil. So a lot of those old oil refineries are set up to run more heavy oil because back in those days, we were getting a lot of oil from Canada. Enter 2020, the U.S. is producing a lot of very light crude oil. Since our refineries are not set up to process light oil, that oil is being exported. So net-net, what is the case? We are a net exporter of energy products. We're the world's largest oil producer. We're the world's largest natural gas producer as well. And a lot of that is being exported. So, you know, when it comes to energy independence, when you hear Trump's, we're not energy independent, that's mostly false. We are the world's largest producer of both oil and natural gas.
When Trump and the supporters will say, part of the reason why Patrick can say that is because the Biden-Harris administration has reached into the reserves on a regular basis, does that hold up factually?
That's another one of those things that most people know. President Biden released 180 million barrels of oil during the height of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. What most Americans don't know is that part of GOP-led Congress back in 2015 legalized the export of crude oil, which was absolutely necessary to get us to where we are today. In the process, that Congress also decided to sell 190 million barrels of oil from the SPR because in the same breath, they said back then that that the U.S. was becoming an oil super producer. So why do we have this SPR? So the SPR has been reduced not only because of Biden releasing 180 million as oil prices surged in the early days of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but Congress under the GOP during Trump's administration mandated the sale up to 190 million barrels.
Patrick DeHaan is here, Gas Buddy Guy on Twitter. He is the key guy to listen to, and you're hearing those facts he's offering up right now. I'll keep it just a short amount of time because I know you're busy. In the Midwest, Chicago you're at, in particular around Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa, people are listening. Without unforeseen events that we can't predict today, what do the next few months look like?
They look better than where we stand today. But it's also those unforeseen events that, as I mentioned, a year ago, you'll remember prices were skyrocketing right now because of refinery outages and refineries that didn't have enough gasoline supply in hand to get them through. So, you know, there is always the possibility of a hurricane, but I will say generally the news going for the next few months is more optimistic than pessimistic. And by October or November, has nothing to do with the election, doesn't matter who's going to be elected, gas prices in Minnesota, you'll see more of those sub $3 prices. That's maybe not lost as a norm. We'll see the sub $3 prices, but probably only during the fall and winter, and summer will feature prices mid to upper threes. Yeah. So you know, we're getting close to the end of summer. I think the good news is you'll see more sub $3 prices as we get closer to fall.
And we know whether it's accurate or not, if it goes as you predicted, and you have so much knowledge, I'm sure it does, they're going to say it's all because they're trying to elect Kamala Harris when it's a bit of cyclical and it's a bit of the outside events which are controlling that versus the puppet strings of the White House.
There'll be a lot of finger pointing on both sides, a lot of conspiracy theories that prices are doing this because they want that person to get elected. It'll happen on both sides. There's a lot of misinformation.
No, but absolutely.
You know? Yeah.
It's out there. Patrick, always good stuff. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
He is excellent on Twitter. He's excellent on this story, at Gas Buddy Guy. Check him out. Durasha, next. Okay, let's jump into this right away.
Let's go.
Norah O'Donnell forced out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Seems that way, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no one who has achieved the anchor desk of the evening news is like, you know what I'd like to do? Long-form stories.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Scott Pelley is on 60 Minutes. He had the same song and dance when he got.
Yep.
And, you know, I mean, 5 years. Great run.
Yeah. Listen.
There's just no super anchor anymore. That time is over.
Is David Muir the so-called super anchor right now?
I mean, he's number one in ratings, but does anyone ever talk about David Muir?
No.
So
who's the is Brokaw the last super anchor?
Yeah,
right.
I mean Brokaw, Jennings.
Yeah, and I mean Jennings for sure. Just Tom,
but then he died.
Yeah,
but Brokaw.
Yeah. Okay.
What is it possible for anyone to be that anymore? No,
You don't think so. Like
no.
we couldn't. The
I don't think so. Too many
Donald
media
Donald Trump, Barack Obama of newscasts. Cannot happen. Just
I don't
star.
Think so. It's just too many options. It's just different.
Who should CBS hire?
You know, Wendy McMahon has my number.
Yeah.
I'm available. I don't know when you look at their, like, who do you like when you look at their
Major
band?
Garrett.
Major.
That's my guy. But, you know, and I love him. I want him to get it. But Major's 60-ish?
Yeah.
I would assume, and again, I think he'd be phenomenal at it. I will defend my guy.
Yeah.
My guess is...
DeCoppel?
They hire somebody younger.
Like a Tony DeCoppel type from CBS Mornings.
Do they view him, you'd know better than me, as a star? Do they view him as just part
of the
show?
I think so. I mean, the fact that he's part of that show.
What about Gail?
Gail, to me, would be... like a difference maker, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the evening news and say the way that you're going to get more audience at 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central is by stealing audience from the other network news shows. I mean, that's the reality.
Yeah.
It's like when I anchored the morning news, I wasn't going to get anyone to wake up earlier.
Yeah.
I was trying to steal people from, at that time, Kim and Tim on Care 11.
Yeah.
And I did.
Yeah.
That was the strategy. Sure. Steal people.
Joe Biden. He's available. He knows the news.
Sounds better than ever. Might be too late for him.
Well, there was a fake Joe Biden the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, people forgot that it wasn't Jill Biden with him.
Yeah. How about Yukis?
She'd make herself available.
You know, she's filled in.
Yeah.
They may rotate. I read that they might rotate through people. That's a classic way to go cheap.
That's just saving money, right?
Saves money, but it also says, well... You have to be responsible with the money for the organization and say, if you're not going to get a huge star that's going to be a difference maker, then why not just go with a couple of journeymen and make it happen?
Did he? Did we just hear Jamie Yuccas called Journeyman by Jason Rush?
No.
Did I hear that?
I mean, at least I threw her in consideration for the job, unlike you.
Well, I didn't call her a journeyman.
You said, I cheer for my guy, Major.
I'm ignoring the disrespect, Jamie.
What about you, Kiss, who's on your show?
She's in L.A. Jeez. I mean, she's in Paris. I mean, that's a given, you know?
I mean, Yuccas is my guy, so.
As far as journeymen go, okay, I guess. I mean, she's seriously, wow.
Yeah.
That shirt wouldn't fly on the CBS Evening News, let me tell you.
Today's shirt? No.
No.
I still have suits. I can suit up.
How about my
Venice Beach shirt?
I mean, when you think of Venice Beach and weightlifting, you think of me, don't you?
Muscle-bound Hartman.
Yes, that's right. It's a different one. Hey, a little canopy talk.
Yes.
And then Jason. He'll spoil more Olympic results also.
Drive time coming up in just a minute. Chad is just feisty today. Is it because you had Shaletta on? Did she get you going? I mean.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that?
Just asking the question. I'm just asking.
Well, I just say, you know, Mark Fry, he used to really look forward to being part of the show.
It's false. It's not true.
I was told.
It's absolutely not true.
On Reddit, mm-hmm. He was all over it. And now.
Yeah. He was the focus of some Reddit updates.
He calls me Hugh. He doesn't even know who I am anymore. Now he's just worried about drive.
Are you?
Drive time.
Well, I would hitch my wagon to the franchise as well.
When is that person arriving?
Yeah. I don't know. We thought it was Vanita. Yeah, you know.
Could be.
Yeah. Time will tell.
Yeah.
White dudes for Harris. We're going to talk about that.
I mentioned it early. Well,
what was your take? Pro or con?
Generated some conversation, but if you're going to talk about, you know, Trump this, degrading this, and then you call him a bastard,
yeah,
you're kind of jumping in the water, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't like white dudes. I don't like this.
You don't like white dudes?
I don't really care for white dudes, generally speaking, no. I don't think we need to have, like, we don't need to separate ourselves. It seems sort of anti what the Democratic Party seems to be claiming they're about. So I don't like it. So we'll talk about that.
Just an excuse to raise money, right?
Oh, yeah. But if it were white dudes for Trump, forget it.
Yeah.
CanopyGroup.com.